It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The state of Pennsylvania's Right to Know law is 5 years old. That law allows citizens to request government records, starting with the presumption that all such documents are public, putting the burden of proof on agencies rather than citizens. But now, the state legislature is looking at making changes to the Right to Know law, including a provision that would allow state agencies to get around regulators when they consider a request for information unduly burdensome. Today, we're discussing Pennsylvania's Right to Know and whether such tweaks are necessary. I'm joined by phone from Harrisburg by Capitol correspondent Mary Wilson. Good day, Mary. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
What are the changes to the open records being discussed in the legislature?
You mentioned one of them, the addition of a bit of language that would allow agencies to basically deny records requests if they deem the request to be, as you said, unduly burdensome. It's something that, you know, especially local governments might see as necessary ever since this law and the Office of Open Records were created, as you said, 5 years ago. We've seen a lot, you know, we've seen small governments get flooded with requests, and one of the things that's and lawmakers are looking for a way to make their lives a little bit easier. So if they can declare that a records request is unduly burdensome, the information, you know, would require too much work to fork it over to someone, then, you know, that request would be able to be denied. The head of the Office of Open Records probably predictably really opposes such language and says, you know, you're going to, you know, without setting down standards for what, you know, unduly burdensome looks like, you're going to have every agency that just doesn't feel like forking over documents claiming this to be a reason for denying a request. So that's just one change that's being discussed.
And why has this come up now? Are these agencies being, they use the term unduly burdened. When you talk about some of the nuisance requests, as they've been characterized, that come up, has there been an abundance of them that has led legislators to want to look at making these tweaks to the law?
Yeah, a lot of agencies and, like I said, small government offices have talked about getting a lot of requests. And there are just some little snafus in the way the law is being administered right now, the way the law was written and the way it's reading right now, that have you know, created this opportunity for revisiting the language. So that's what the law's original author is doing now. He's proposed a whole slew of changes, and those were discussed in a hearing about 2 weeks ago in the legislature. To give you an example of one of the problems we see, I say small government, like local governments, I say that over and over again, but it really is true that local governments weren't necessarily prepared to deal with, you know, a huge spike in public records requests when they've got kind of the same staff they've always had. All of a sudden, you've got to create an office that deals with records requests, that goes and finds the information, that copies it, that sends it to a person. And some of these records requests, perhaps not unduly burdensome, perhaps not, that's not the right word, but they are kind of a nuisance. You get people who, even the director of the Office of Open Records says, they've just got a screw loose, and they're making requests ad nauseum to local governments. You've got people who are requesting information, and it's just for the sake of their business. For example, you've got people who are requesting all the public records associated with dog licenses. You know, if you're getting a lot of those a year, if you have to keep on, you know, forking over information about dog licenses so someone can start a dog walking or, you know, a pet grooming business, you know, what's a possible remedy to that? Should government be in the business of helping businesses get that public information? One of the suggested changes to the law is to require any for-profit entity that's requesting information, so distinguishing that for-profit entity from, say, a researcher, a student, a journalist, a public citizen, saying, okay, you're a for-profit entity, you're requesting public information, that's fine, but we're going to charge a fee for that. So that will pay for some of the work that's required, especially at this local government level, at township offices, county offices, things like that.
Today, Mary Wilson, you've been reporting on Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln being, for the most part, exempt from the state's open record laws, while state-owned universities are not. What can you tell us about proposals to get rid of the exemptions for schools like Pitt and Penn State?
I can tell you that it's a big, tricky mess. Maybe not mess, but it's a really tricky line to walk. The Office of Open Records Director raised this point that, let me start here. You know, you mentioned the state-owned universities that are held to this law. They have to have an Office of Open Records. The state-related schools are not, so they don't have to. They're not held to the right to know law. Beyond, like, I think they have to publish the top salaries of their officers. And there are a few other salary-related bits of information they have to disclose when requested. But if you're Penn State, for example, and you have a budget of more than $4 billion, and you get a little bit less than $300 million a year from the state, is that grounds for having to set up your own Office of Open Records? I mean, just, you know, that little, it's almost a drop in the bucket in a multi-billion-dollar budget. As far as the money you get from the state. So the Office of Open Records Director has said, you know, one of the points that all these state-related schools are raising is, you know, they're getting only so much money from the state, and yet it's expected, you know, the new presumption now, the new goal is that it should buy all the transparency in the world. I believe three of the state-related schools have said they are outright opposed to being held to the right-to-know law. I believe it's Lincoln University that has not gone on the record on the matter.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with our Capitol correspondent, Mary Wilson, about the legislative discussions that are taking place about possible tweaks to the state's right-to-know law. Explain, Mary, how the Jerry Sandusky scandal became a flashpoint for the debate over the right-to-know exemption for the aforementioned colleges and universities, Pitt, Penn State, Temple, et cetera?
It's difficult to get lawmakers to spell out exactly what they think would have been, what information would have been available to them if the school had been held to the right-to-know law. But suffice it to say that lawmakers kind of voice this vague, we might have known more type statement. And they say, you know, we are supporting these state schools in some respect, and so we should know more information. It has been, you know, media organizations filed a right-to-know request to Penn State after charges were filed against Jerry Sandusky on, tens of counts of child abuse. The media organizations led by CNN requested police records. They would not have been able to get police records under a right-to-know request. Those police records are special records that would have required a subpoena. But lawmakers keep going back to this, you know, what more could we have known? You know, what more information would have been available to us about Penn State and its inner workings if the right-to-know law had been applied there? Like, it would have been applied to, you know, a state-owned school, Slippery Rock, you know, for example.
And certainly the media organizations would have the greatest opportunity because of the resources that are at their disposal, namely money, take whatever legal recourse they may need in order to gain access to these records, certainly more so than a private citizen might have acting on his or her own.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Sometimes these records requests can get kind of expensive. You know, you look at copying fees, and, you know, I filed one recently, and it would have cost me about $200 to get the copying done. So that's a question, can just the average, Joe public citizen pay for that? You know, is the average public citizen willing to pay for that? Yes, that's certainly a question.
So where do things stand, Mary, with some of the current right-to-know changes being proposed in the legislature?
That's a great question, and the answer is really unclear. I've talked to the let me set the stage here. We are looking at a very crowded legislative calendar. There are tons of bills that have been introduced and are at different stages of the legislative process in terms of where they are. You know, have they been heard by a committee? Have they been voted on by a committee? Lots of bills, but we've got, you know, three big issues that the governor's office is pushing, that different constituents, that different groups in the legislature are pushing, and we've got about a month to see a budget through the passage if it's going to be on time. So crowded legislative calendar, and none of the proposed changes to the right to know law have been voted on by a committee yet. It seems very unlikely that any of them, whether they regard, you know, charging fees to businesses that are asking for right to know, that are filing records requests, whether it's that or whether it's the much more politically tricky and difficult to kind of outline changes to what schools, you know, what level of transparency state-related schools are held to, you know, that's the gamut of proposals, and it looks very unlikely that either set of them will be passed before the traditional summer recess. So I think we're looking at action on this fall at the earliest.
Capitol correspondent Mary Wilson with us by phone from Harrisburg. Mary, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, we'll continue our discussion of Pennsylvania's open records law with Terry Mutchler, Executive Director of the State Office of Open Records, and Leah Samuel of our content partner, Public Source. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the state of Pennsylvania's right to know law. It allows you to request government records and presumes all such documents are public and that you have a right to access them. But the state legislature is looking at making changes to the law that could make it harder to get a hold of those records. To join our conversation, call 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. I'm joined now in studio by Leah Samuel of our content partner Public Source, who has written extensively on this topic, including her recent piece, The Right to Know, K-N-O-W, or The Right to Know, N-O. Leah Samuel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Also with us by phone is Terry Mutchler, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records. Terry Mutchler, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Terry, let's begin by having you clarify how the state's open record law works. Every government record is presumed to be open unless what?
Unless it falls into one of 30 exceptions. So basically, if your listeners want to go get a copy of a superintendent's contract or a copy of a building permit or a superintendent's salary or the police chief's salary or the mayor, they file a right-to-know request, and any document that they ask for is presumed to be available. But there are 30 exceptions that say if it falls into one of these categories, you're not going to get it. For example, if it's attorney-client privilege, if it's a medical record, if it's someone's Social Security number, or if it's a criminal investigative record, you're not going to get those types of records. But under this law, which is now one of the strongest in the United States, there's been hundreds of thousands, literally, of records that have been released since this law was enacted in 2009.
So what are the concerns that you have about the proposed changes in the law?
Well, there's a couple. First, I think it's important for your listeners to know that that both the right-to-know law that was authored by Senator Dominic Pileggi, the majority leader out of Delaware County, is an extremely strong law. The changes that are proposed, many of those we at the Office of Open Records support and actually suggested. So there's a couple of things with this law, though, that I think will end up being problems. One is it would allow, if an agency believes that a request for records is unduly burdensome, they can skip the Office of Open Records and go right to court. The problem with that is that there are many agencies, I think, that will not apply this fairly and evenly and even accurately. There are some agencies that they think if they receive one or two right-to-know requests that that's unduly burdensome, and in some instances it could be. But, you know, they should at least get through the process with us. And I think what you're going to see is I think you'll see a lot of agencies attempting to circumvent the administrative process. You know, that's one concern. Another concern is some of the way that the language is written related to criminal investigative records. In most states in the United States, you can get a copy of a criminal investigative record once the investigation is closed, or you can get a portion of it once it's closed. Here in Pennsylvania, you can never get a copy of a criminal investigative record unless the agency or police department is so willing to give it. Those are some of the big tickets.
Right. 412-246-2002, the number to call. And in reference to something you just said, Leah, appropriately enough, Chris and Moon is on the line with a question that fits right into this conversation. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. So the question, well, actually, you almost hit the point I was about to make there, madam. So basically, can I request, for example, a police report related to myself? So presumably the whole thing with Sandusky was the media was going after information about him. But given that this would be related to me, can I go after that? And then associated with that is, for example, if you go into you can go to the court and you can if you have two relatives, say to the court that they don't want, for example, liquor stores in Pennsylvania to serve a particular person. These liquor stores won't serve them, and furthermore, they won't tell the person why, even though they had no right of, to defend themselves. So there's various laws like this. Or, for example, the police can say, for example, there's a homeless guy in the street, don't tell this guy any alcohol, but the guy won't know, he won't have had a chance to defend himself. So do people like that have a right to go and say, I want my records on this so I can pretty much, dig it up and either sue or complain or something?
So the question is, do you have a right to subpoena your own records?
Yes.
Terry, what is your response to
well,
that?
Well, keep in mind this. Under the right to know law, a subpoena is not required. And I think many agencies try to tell the public that, oh, you need a subpoena to do that. That's not accurate. Second of all, when you're dealing with a copy of your own police report, or we see this a lot with inmates and medical records, your listeners or an inmate for that matter may be entitled to their records under a different law, but certainly not under the right to know law. A lot of times we have people that will file right to know requests and they will ask for their own personnel records. Now, under the right to know law, personnel records are off limits. But if I'm working for an agency and for an employer, a public employer, and I want to get a copy of my personnel record, they're entitled to do that, but not under the right to know law. They would use a different law that governs the release of their personnel record. And a lot of times there's confusion about that. For example, though, if you're involved in a traffic accident, those reports are public records. You can get them. And agencies are permitted to charge up to $15 for those records for like a vehicular accident. What we see around the state is a couple of things. By and large, most police departments, if you're involved in an accident or an altercation or something, you can get a copy of your own police report. They just sort of give it to you. There's other agencies, a handful, that will require you to either file the right to know request, or they will ask that you inaccurately they'll ask for a subpoena. So it's important to keep in mind what the right to know law does and doesn't do. The right to know law is designed so that public officials can't keep secrets, and also so public officials, so that the citizenry can understand what each agency is doing and how they're behaving. It's not designed for your own personal kind of filing cabinet. So if you want a copy of your personnel record, you have to use the appropriate law to get it, not the right to know law, for example.
Well, Terry, thank you for clarifying that. Now, Leah Samuel, in your piece, you reported that even after 5 years of open records in Pennsylvania, the open records law that exists in this state, getting government records at the municipal, county, and state levels is often difficult. What were you able to learn?
Well, in doing the story, you know, one thing that was emphasized over and over again by different people that I spoke to was the fact that it has only been 5 years. There was a huge change 5 years ago, changing the basically the burden of proof. I mean, that was the biggest change. Prior to that, your state correspondent alluded to earlier, there was a requirement for the citizen to prove that the records were public and that indeed they should have them. With the change, now you have government agencies required to prove that, you know, that the information is exempt. So that burden now is off of the citizen and onto these government agency. That's a big change, but it's only been 5 years. And so within that time, you know, there have been a few snafus. There are situations that weren't actually foreseen by the changes in the law. There are some tweaks that are needed. There are some things that need to be clarified. And so after just 5 years under the new law, you know, there's still a lot of bugs to be worked out. And so that's kind of what we're seeing in terms of what happens when people request records. I mean, there are some records where the information sort of straddles the line between public and exempt. And so agencies don't necessarily know what to do. There are some bits of information that are indeed public, but you do have city government and county governments and state agencies that are not accustomed to dealing with this way of functioning. I mean, after, you know, for so long doing it one way and then now having to do it another way, it's just it's been a real adjustment over the last 5 years.
But you also found sometimes government agencies going so far as to use deception. Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, sure. Actually, and when I was working on the story, I mean, I was really amazed because I looked through a lot of the appeals that the Office of Open Records received, and some of them actually went as far as the state Supreme Court. One example in particular involved the Department of Environmental Protection. Someone had requested part of a database of information that they had. And the DEP said, well, you know, we can't really give them that because we'd have to trawl through a whole bunch of data and put it together for them. And under the Right to Know law, the government agency is not required to create a record for you. And so the DEP was claiming that it would have to, you know, go through all this data and put together this information for this person. But then when it went to the Commonwealth Court, the DEP was asked, well, do you have this information in database form? And they said, yeah. And the court ruled then that they just had to give the part of the database to the person that had asked for it. But yeah, I mean, they will say things like, well, it's an awful lot of work for us to go through all of this information when in fact it's just a couple of keystrokes. So, you know, those things, do happen.
Terry Mutchler, you said in Leah's piece that many local and state agencies, as Leah alluded to, that they're not used to. Even at this point, at 5 years in, they're not used to the requirements for openness. What are the agencies telling you?
Well, I mean, I think what we see, and I would echo much of what Leah has just said there. I mean, here's what you see at the end of the day. You see two extreme philosophies. On one hand, you see citizens and members of the public who are convinced that every public official is a criminal. But on the other hand, you see agencies and public officials that don't like the public. And so we do see the examples that she's speaking about where agencies will tell us that this law is a hassle. Not all agencies, but it's out there. Public officials, many, will say that they dislike this law, that it provides too much information, and often that they will kind of hide behind the balance of the rubric of privacy, which I'm very concerned about privacy. It's not that we're not concerned, but we're dealing with public records. And so I think it's generous to say that that agencies just aren't used to dealing with it. I think that the more accurate, perhaps, way to say that is that there are many agencies that don't want to deal with it, and therefore they don't. And, you know, I still have lawyers that around the Commonwealth that are citing the old law. We had one instance where an attorney, in responding to a right to know request, wrote on the side of the response, none of your business. So the two extremes that we see are, we see that extreme on the public official side of it, but I also see, we had a situation outside of Philadelphia where a requester filed 300 right-to-know requests in about a three-month period. And anybody, any listener that wants to try to suggest that there are not people that use this law to harass public officials should come and sit at my desk and watch this stuff come by. It does happen. And, of course, when you do a little digging in that case, what you see is, you know, somebody lost an election and they're upset. But the problem is, and I say this to the legislature and I say it when I train publicly, you don't want to make laws or restrictions based on the crazy people at either end. You have to keep this mainstream and recognize that access to public information is a building block of democracy. And the minute that you take away a citizen's access to their own records, I think you see a crumble. If I went to the bank and said, I want to take out $100 of my own money, and the bank said, well, what do you want it for? You know, we'd go nuts. The same thing here. We want citizens to be able to go and look at the records that they own to determine whether public agencies, ours included, are doing the right thing the right way, and to be sure that there's not secrets. However, I just want to add one more point, and that's this. I do find that while there has been a great resistance to this law initially, there's also a large contingent of people that embrace it. I believe that most public agencies want to do the right thing and do the right thing. However, there are agencies, as the one that Leah had just referenced, where, you know, in essence, tried to say, well, look, you know, this is going to be too much of a hassle, and the court didn't buy that.
Let me jump in, Terry, and ask you this: when someone gets stonewalled by a state agency in their attempts to get information, what recourse do they have?
They come to the Office of Open Records. The Office of Open Records can order release of the records if they are, in fact, public records. The reality also is, and we're dealing with this in the new law, let's say that a citizen comes to us and we say, yes, it's absolutely public, and the agency doesn't do anything. Then the citizen is in a tough spot, because then the citizen has a couple of choices. Do they dig deep into their pockets and go to court themselves? We've seen that happen a few times. The Office of Open Records is not equipped to go into court and to seek an action that would say to the court, look, we really, really, really meant what we said. There's an attorney that does media law and who testified before the committee. He's from Pittsburgh. His name is David Strasburger. He came up with a great idea, adding enforcement, an enforcement mechanism that would include the Office of Open Records as well as the court, and we support that. But we have seen situations where an agency, ignores us. That's basically as plain as I can say it.
Yeah, and that could be quite onerous for people who are who want to actually appeal and then take it further. In my story, I interviewed a man named Simon Campbell, who was a school board member in the Pensbury School District, and he. He's part of an organization, or he has a website that opposes teacher strikes, and he asked for some information from the state regarding the salaries of professionals who work for the state. And basically what happened, he ended up spending $20,000 in fees and lawyer fees and that sort of thing in order to try and get this information, and he ended up giving up because he just said it was too expensive for him.
I want to add something about that particular case. That was a highly unusual case where the agency agreed with Mr. Campbell. The agency in that case said, yes, these are public. And when the agency made a move to release them, the union was involved in this matter was with the state system of higher education. They're the ones that went to court to block it. So you had a highly unusual situation where the agency was agreeing that it was public, and they had an intervener intervene in that case. So that's not typical of what we see.
Yeah, Terry's right.
In that case, the agency was doing the right thing.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guests are Terry Mutchler, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, who you just heard. She's with us by phone from Harrisburg, and Leah Samuel of our content partner, Public Source. We have just a few minutes left. Leah Samuel, what suggestions are you hearing for stopping some agencies and government from flouting the law, the open records law?
Well, a lot of those suggestions are actually taking the form of Senate Bill 444, which has a lot of changes being suggested for the open records law. As I mentioned before, some of the bigger problems that have been discovered, some things are just not clear. So clearer definitions about what kinds of records can actually be released, clearer explanations or clearer pieces of the law that actually state what is exempt and what isn't. Just basically getting some clearer language is one of the biggest suggestions I've been hearing on both sides.
Terry Mutchler, you have said that as we discuss what the legislature is doing and Senate Bill 444, the tweaks that they're trying to put into the Right to Know law, you've said in testimony that public charter schools are the cancer of the state's Right to Know law. Why did you say that?
Charter schools are the number one violator of the state's Right to Know law. We've had case after case. It became clear very early on. This law became effective in 2009. In 2010, I had my chief counsel reach out to charter schools to train them because at that point they were just ignoring the law, but we figured it was an educational issue in terms of knowing the parameters of it. In 2012, we wrote to the organization the group of the charter schools to say, look, you guys are ignoring citizens, you're ignoring us. We would really like to get together to see if we can help you solve this. Some of the statistics of the cases that have come to us that we've decided on the merits, in 86% of those cases, they've ignored the citizen and they've ignored us. In 76% of the cases, they ignored us. In 84% of the cases, they ignored the citizen. That's why I said that.
And so I guess as a final question for you, should a state agency have the right to appeal in some of these cases?
I believe so, yes, because in any state around the United States, listen, I know it would be great for people to say, look, you come to the Office of Open Records, you get a final decision, and that should be it. But the reality is the Office of Open Records makes mistakes. And so there have been times when we have said a record was not public and the courts have said, yes, they were. I do believe you need that safety net. The difference is this. What we need is to have an effective, I think that what Mr. Strausberger came up with is a very effective middle of the road. It says, if, in essence, you ignore an order by the Office of Open Records, the penalty, $500 a day,
exactly. Terry, we're out of time, but I want to thank you very much for joining us. Terry Mutchler, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, and also Leah Samuel of our content partner, Public Source. Thank you both for being with us today. Coming up, business correspondent Rebecca Harris has advice for job seekers and speaking volumes on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.